The second extract from the draft of my book on pet ownership. After this, there'd been a short interlude when my brother and myself had been the proud owners of two black and white rabbits. They were called, bizarrely, Jimmy and Nibbles, and ownership was disputed as they seemed identical and shared a hutch, made, I recall, by my dad. They'd arrived in the house following a visit one summer to an uncle of my mum's in Wiltshire. We must have been returning from holiday, either in Gloucester with my mum's twin brother, who was stationed in the Air Force there, or from another aunt in Essex. I don't remember which, but summer holidays in my early childhood were invariably spent with relatives who would make return visits to us to enjoy the Welsh beaches. Uncle Jim, we discovered, was a champion owner and breeder of rabbits, and the walls of his garden were lined with hutches containing many of them. At the time, I didn't realise that they were mostly being raised to eat. My parents wisely protected me from the shock of this reality. I do remember commenting at some stage that Uncle Jim must really like rabbits, and my dad's knowing reply, "Oh yes, he really likes a rabbit." The subtlety of this was lost on my eight-year-old's vocabulary. We'd been shown two small black and white rabbits described as Dutch in origin and asked if we would like them. Then looking at my dad, he added, "As pets, if you like." Somehow they were conveyed home, probably in a cardboard box in the family Ford Anglia. Once at home, in short order, my father had constructed a wooden hutch for them to live in. We would supply them with vegetables and maybe there was rabbit food as well, as there was a pet food shop in the next village. I recollect that everything was fine until out of kindness it was suggested that they would enjoy the freedom of running around the garden and chewing some fresh dandelions and clover. All went well until the family cat came in the garden, and fearing some rabbit massacre, I called my mum, who arrived in time to see the two small rabbits ganging up on the cat and chasing it up the cherry tree in the middle of the lawn. Everyone was amused, apart from the cat, who stayed up there until the rabbits were put back in their hutch. The rabbit rampage was not complete. They'd started biting off the flower heads in the garden borders and were recaptured by me and put away before the damage was too noticeable. Unfortunately, as my mum was unaware of this and knowing that they seemed to be able to take care of themselves, as far as the cat was concerned, mum had allowed them free range in the garden while I was at school. The damage was extensive. Hardly a flower head was intact apart from the climbing roses. That evening there was a family discussion and their fate was sealed. The cat was avoiding going out, the garden had no flowers, and unbeknown to me, Jimmy and Nibbles may have already lived longer than if they'd stayed with Uncle Jim, their namesake. Rescue was at hand though, as one of my classmates was an ambitious small animal breeder and already had mice, rats, rabbits and guinea pigs in cages in a summer house in his garden. Children being the kind souls they are, he'd already acquired the prefix pregnant to his surname, although it was acknowledged that he had a useful additional revenue stream to his pocket money. I later heard he qualified as an accountant. "You must ask David if he'd like them," said my mum, with my dad adding, "Tell him they come with a cage," anxious to restore family tranquility, and no doubt thinking an empty cage in the garden might lead to other unwelcome acquisitions. I quickly recovered from the loss of the rabbits, and it is often the way with children, now had ambitions of owning a hamster, having admired one at a friend's house. I was provided with Hammy the hamster on, I think, my 10th birthday, probably after a period of extensive lobbying on my behalf. He was also named rather unimaginatively after the TV hamster of the same name in the series Tales of the Riverbank. Today, having watched some original footage of the programme on YouTube, I realised what a dangerous life he must have led, although he lived almost the full hamster lifespan of 18 months to 2 years, having the good grace to pass away while I was away at scout camp. The series showed various adventures of the hamster and his friend Roddy the White Rat, with voices of the animals provided by Johnny Morris. Some of the exploits are recreated by my younger brother and myself with the hamster's apparently enthusiastic cooperation, although I suspect he was just pleased to be let out of his cage and possibly over-anxious to be up at what was to him the middle of the night. The reenacted exploits included sailing him on our small garden pond, sending him around the lawn in a clockwork car that he constantly escaped from to eat clover and dandelion leaves, his favourite delicacies along with peas. The hamster was spared any involvement in more ambitious storylines in the TV series, but I'm confident that if we'd had access to a flying model aircraft or a balloon, then his life may have been more adventurous, not to mention perilous. I'm just thinking he was fortunate that his lifespan did not overlap with the ownership of Jack's space rocket, as the reaction to requesting the return of the rocket and hamster naught from a neighbouring garden is hard to imagine. I'm sure the RSPCA would be called. The hamster's enthusiasm for leftover vegetables led to my younger brother and me vying as to who could leave the most vegetables on our plates for Hammy, as he gets bored with hamster food. My dad would darkly mutter that he wouldn't fit in the cage if he ate all that. The hamster was never his favourite after the overcoat disaster. I don't really recall what happened about the overcoat repair or whether Hammy carried on with overnighting in the cupboard, presumably with anything else a safe distance from the bars. That is the one thing the pet shop had not mentioned. Hamsters are nocturnal and with poor eyesight prefer to be up and about in the dark. So his initial home in my bedroom was less than ideal, because at night his activities were not designed to allow anyone in the same room a good night's sleep. His repertoire of noisy activities were all amplified by the metal cage he lived in, and included noisily gnawing anything he fancied in the cage, including the metal bars, and according to the Know Your Hamster book that we had, the gnawing was necessary to keep his teeth down, which grew constantly unless checked. This book ambitiously suggested that home care of overgrown hamsters' teeth could be dealt with by using nail scissors to avoid a visit to the vets. Even at my tender age, I knew this to be mad advice, and that was without asking the hamster for his opinion about it. The book also advised placing pieces of clean wood and even wooden cotton reels in his cage for this purpose. The cotton reels were not a great success. His attempts to gnaw the edge of them seemed to make them noisily bounce around the cage with him hanging on. The other noise generator was his exercise wheel, which he would noisily use for hours on end, and no amount of lubrication seemed to be able to quiet it down, going from mild squeaking to amplified grinding noises. A solution was found with unexpected results. Downstairs off the living room was a cupboard under the stairs, so it was suggested that his cage was kept on the sideboard and at our bedtime, after he'd been up and about playing for our enjoyment for a couple of hours, until at our bedtime we would see him transferred to the dark cupboard, where behind a closed door he could enjoy his nocturnal activities with minimum disruption to the rest of the household. I'm guessing this arrangement worked satisfactorily for a period of time, but the arrangements were to come to an abrupt end when one morning the getting ready for work and school activities were rudely interrupted by a loud shout of "bloody hell," my dad's favourite curse. Arriving in the living room, we all found my father with the cupboard door open, standing in his best winter tweed overcoat and poking his whole hand out through a large round hole in the material. The culprit was discovered sleeping in his newly lined woolen bed after what must have been a hard night's chewing through the bars of his cage to harvest his new improved bedding from my dad's overcoat, which had been hanging on the back of the cupboard door and presumably resting temptingly up against the bars of the cage. My mum's suggestion that she may be able to darn it and perhaps it wouldn't show did not seem to help matters. Remembering the abrupt end to our short period of rabbit owners, we were relieved when returning from school that day to find Hammy was still a member of the family, and he went on to live the full hamster lifespan of almost 2 years. As I said earlier, he had the good grace to expire while I was away at Cub or Scout camp and continued to provide entertainment even from beyond the grave, this time to a busload of people. My mother was left with instructions about his food, cleaning, emptying his jam jar. Yes, hamsters can be trained to use their own toilet. After all, he'd already proved to my dad he could make his own bed. Also, that on no account was my younger brother to handle him. This was probably unnecessary advice, as my brother showed an understandable reluctance to do so, having had his fingers nipped by him on several occasions. I was not fully appraised of events, no doubt to limit the trauma, but to summarise, it appears that sometime during my absence, the hamster was similarly not seen to be out and about, so as to speak. After a day or two, my mum found him curled up motionless in his bed, and gentle prodding didn't seem to rouse him. Placing him in a small cardboard box, my mum and brother took him on the bus to the vet, not for a post-mortem, but to establish that he wasn't hibernating. Swansea buses at the time could be akin to a mobile social event, and it wasn't long before the passengers were involved in a game of what's in the box that mum had been carrying so carefully, a game which developed into a game of dead or not dead as the box was passed around the bus. I'm unable to tell you whether the passengers included any with relevant medical or veterinary experience, but this was later provided by the vet. Short of banging the small rodent on the desk, he more or less reenacted the Monty Python dead parrot sketch yet to be inflicted on the public. He also relayed the pearl of wisdom that hibernation is a rare event in July, even in Wales.